Israel is being accused by Palestinians and many in the global community of using excessive force on Palestinian protesters this week. 60 Palestinians were killed along the border between Israel and the Gaza Strip following the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Israel says its troops acted in self-defense and blamed the militant group Hamas, which rules Gaza, for the deaths. On Tuesday, we talked about the demonstrations with a former Israeli Foreign Service official. Susan Abulhawa joins us now. She's a Palestinian-American writer, author of the best-selling novel Mornings in Jenin. She's also the founder of Playgrounds for Palestine, which builds playgrounds in Palestine and UN refugee camps in Lebanon. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the protests themselves and the violence, can you talk about the move of the U.S. opening its embassy in Jerusalem? What do you make of that move?
Well, I mean, it contravenes international law. It contravenes U.S. standing policy for the past 70 years or so. It's unjust. You know, Jerusalem had historically been, prior to the establishment of Israel, an open city where Muslim Jews and Christians, various sects of Christianity, in fact, all lived in relative harmony. And really, the establishment of Israel has reversed that, and to a really tragic degree, in a way that that gives privilege to Jews of the world over other indigenous people who have lived there. And by moving the embassy there, the United States is really kind of is legitimizing that kind of exclusivity, that ethno-religious supremacy.
I want to give a listen to U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. She defended Israel's response to protests, speaking before the Security Council earlier this week. Here's a listen.
Those who suggest that the Gaza violence has anything to do with the location of the American embassy are sorely mistaken. Rather, the violence comes from those who reject the existence of the State of Israel in any location.
Susan, what's your response to what we heard there from Ambassador Haley?
Palestinians in Gaza have been very explicit about their reason and their motivation for protesting on their own land in Gaza. And it is their express reason is to return to their homes. Israel has had Gaza under a terrible, suffocating siege for the past 11 years, whereby they have been calculating literally the caloric intake, allowing a minimal amount of food for people to sustain themselves. Not allowing building materials, school materials, particular medicines, controlling every aspect of Palestinian lives, not allowing fishermen to actually fish in the deep sea, relegating them to less than 3 nautical miles where there's hardly any fish. I mean, every aspect of Palestinian life in Gaza has been curtailed. People can't leave, can't go to study. People, you know, and that's not to even mention the bombing campaigns. It's just utterly hideous, horrible, murderous bombing campaigns that they've launched over the years against a principally defenseless civilian population. And as a result of that, over 11 years, there's been increasing despair in Gaza. People have electricity for less than 4 hours a day. 100% of the water resources is unfit for drinking. There's 50% unemployment. People have no hope. Half of children under the age of 5 have no will to live. And this has been imposed by Israel. Gazans have gone to this fence. It's not even a border. Israel has no internationally recognized borders because they've refused to declare their border. So this is a fence that Israel has put up. It's 3 layers of electrified fence, and Palestinians went there to protest their condition, to demand their right to return to their homes. Now, these are mostly refugees in Gaza who were expelled by Israel when Israel was created, and has been occupying their homes and their villages since. And they have that right. That's a right enshrined in international law. The Palestinians have told us why why they're taking this action. It's not up to Nikki Haley or anybody else to explain their motivations after they've already explained what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it ought to be, frankly, self-evident to anybody who understands, who's watching, who's been watching what's happening in Gaza for the past 10 years.
Susan Abulhawa is with us now talking about the latest news from Gaza and Israel after the move of the American embassy to Jerusalem. Susan, Israel has blamed the violence over this week on the group Hamas. They say they are using encouraging civilians to approach the border. They're using them as human shields, in effect, so militants can slip past the border and endanger people on the other side of it, on the other side of these fences. What do you say to that?
First of all, this started before the U.S. embassy move. Palestinians are marking the 70th anniversary of the Nakba, which is the catastrophe when they were expelled from their homes and replaced with foreign Jews from all over the world who had absolutely no familial, historic, or ancestral connection to the land. You know, and I really don't know why U.S. media, I mean, with respect, I don't understand why people continue to repeat this trope, this red herring about Hamas. It's as if, you know, Palestinians, like, we don't have agency, as if all these people can't think for themselves. And even if Hamas were to tell people to demonstrate and resist and even fight back, it would not be wrong. It would be right, because we have a right to defend ourselves too. We have a right not to be imprisoned in the world's largest open air prison. We have a right to life. We have a right to aspire to a better future. So even if they did that, even if Hamas told people to go, even if they were behind this, even let's just say for the sake of argument that none of us, that we don't have a civil society and none of us can think for ourselves and nobody has any kind of will of their own and we're just kind of robots following Hamas. Even if that were true, it would not be wrong. It would not be wrong for us to defend ourselves against. And the second part of that is, you know, how people can still entertain the idea that Israel is defending itself when there has not even been a single injury of Israelis, and there are 12,000, over 12,000 bodies that are either murdered or maimed, missing eyes, missing limbs, lacerated spinal cords. Do you have any idea what that looks like? 12,000 human beings. And we're still saying Israel is defending itself? I mean, it beggars the mind. It's difficult for me to fathom how we can continue in this discourse in the face of evidence that ought to just, you know, preclude this kind of language. And if the roles were reversed, can you imagine what? If the roles were reversed, if Palestinians had killed that many Jewish people.
Susan Abulhawa is with us, Palestinian-American writer, author, and activist. We're talking about the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem this week and ongoing protests in Gaza. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to the news we're seeing there along the fence between Israel and Gaza? How do you think the Trump administration should respond? How hopeful are you for the prospects of peace in the region? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We're talking about this week's protests in Gaza. Susan Abulhawa is with us, Palestinian-American writer and author of the novel Mornings in Jenin, founder of Playgrounds for Palestine, which builds playgrounds in Palestine and UN refugee camps in Lebanon. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What role do you think, if any, do you think the United States should be playing? What do you make of what the Trump administration is doing in terms of moving the embassy and other actions in the Middle East? You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, guys. I just want to say I completely agree with your guest's viewpoint. And one issue that I think people oftentimes don't realize is that collective punishment of populations of people is expressly prohibited by, I don't know which one of the Geneva Conventions, but it's expressly prohibited by the Geneva Conventions. What Israel is arguing is that what's happening to Gaza is Hamas's fault. So Israel is doing exactly what's prohibited by the Geneva Convention. They're punishing collectively all of the people of Gaza and saying, well, look at Hamas. It's Hamas's fault. That's forbidden by the Geneva Conventions. And I wish people realized that. And I wish, you know, the media would talk about that angle of the situation. Thank you.
John, thanks for your call. Susan, your thoughts.
Well, he's right. It is prohibited by the Fourth Geneva Convention. And so is the kind of shoot to kill actions that they're doing, this kind of wanton sniper shooting at unarmed demonstrators. And people think that, you know, these people, that Palestinians are coming at them and attacking them. And Palestinians are actually like more than 3 football fields away from any soldier. So they are literally behind fortified positions, putting human beings in their aim and shooting. They're shooting at limbs, they're shooting at heads, and at least one video of that was leaked from the other side in which they were high-fiving each other for getting a good shot. And when that video leaked and went viral, rather than actually investigate or punish the sniper who was basically hunting human beings and celebrating the kill, Israel decided to punish the person who videotaped it and said that, well, that's how, you know, they're just it's a stressful situation and they're venting and that's how they let off steam, is to celebrate, you know. So, I mean, this is the mentality of Israel.
John, thanks for the call. Susan, are you hopeful? Do you want to see a United Nations or other international organization investigate what happened there this week?
Well, there was a motion put forth in the Security Council to launch an investigation into the killings, but the United States, of course, squashed it and prevented that from going through. And, you know, I say, as we often do, you know, if Israel has nothing to hide, then why not allow an investigation? But they do have a lot to hide. And so they have obstructed nearly every UN investigation. But nonetheless, I mean, there are plenty of human rights organizations who have who go in and who collect testimonies and statements. And for decades, they have been documenting hideous human rights abuses. I mean, Israel actually has one of the worst and most consistent human rights records in the world. And yet, people don't understand that in this country because the narrative that's put forth always is that this is a vibrant democracy, et cetera, et cetera. And this is, you know, this kind of narrative is pushed, is by design. It's pushed by wealth, highly funded PR campaigns. I mean, one of the most recent is this kind of art washing or culture washing, where they bring in international artists or they engage their own artists in international arenas to obscure what they're doing to Palestinians.
Right, you're calling on the orchestra. You're in the Philadelphia area, the local orchestra. They are, I think, planning a trip to play in Israel, and you're calling on them to cancel that.
Exactly, yeah. So the Philadelphia Orchestra is going to Israel. They're leaving next week, actually, and we have we had a letter sent to them about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, signed by over 100 individual personalities and 35 social justice organizations, including Black Lives Matter, Black and Brown Workers Collective, Real Justice Coalition, Jews for Justice, Jews for Peace, sorry. And they weren't interested in speaking with us. They're getting $2 million from the Jewish Federation and to collaborate with the State of Israel. And so they're going with that. And in response, we've taken to the streets to protest. For 7 weeks, we've had sustained protests against them. And this is the kind of collaboration and the kind of lending, the kind of art washing, lending music and art and culture to whitewash war crimes. It's horrible.
Susan Abulhawa is with us talking about Gaza and Israel. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in Mineral Point. Mark, hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm really glad to hear the Palestinian voice on this issue, because of all the international issues covered in the U.S. media, the issue of Palestine, the Palestinians, and the conflict with Israel is the most disgracefully unfair of any of the issues that have international scene. The Palestinian point of view is almost never represented. And
I'm going to jump in. It's not a great signal. I don't know if you can make it out. Susan, he was making the case that the Palestinian point of view is underrepresented in the American media.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying, because I was having a hard time hearing. It absolutely is underrepresented in U.S. media, and the proof of that is the fact that the average American doesn't understand that that Israel is an occupying force. They don't understand that Israel was formed by European Jews who had never been in Palestine, who had no familial or ancestral connection to Palestine. And in that formation, in doing so, removed the indigenous Muslim and Christian population. And the way it's presented in U.S. media is as if Palestinians are trying to usurp indigenous people or something, and so, as if Palestinians are the ones occupying the land, as if Palestinians are the aggressors, when in fact, Palestinians have no military, no army, no real weapons, nothing, pitted against one of the most technological death industries in the world. And it's, I don't understand U.S. media. I don't understand how the degree of complicity that mainstream media is when it comes to Israel.
I'll go to another caller now. Lisa is with us in Milwaukee. Lisa, hi.
Hello. I would just like to suggest a different strategy, political strategy, for the Palestinian people, because the one that they're using now is just not working. And I would just like to preface my remarks by saying that decades ago, I was a Zionist. I am now pro-Palestinian. This is my spiritual perspective, because I'm a kind of person who is on the side of the underdog. So the strategy that I think would be much more effective in gaining the Palestinian rights, stopping the settlement, stopping turning Palestinian land into cantonments where they can no longer live and just being usurped by what is the Jewish state now, would be to stop burning tires and stop throwing stones with slingshots. Go to that wall. Everyone go. All the thousands with the children and hunger strike. The Israeli activists, the peace activists, will come from the other side, on their side of the wall, and they will do the same.
Lisa, I want to jump in because we're just about out of time. Susan, briefly, your thoughts, a passive resistance approach, I guess Lisa is calling for.
Yeah, that's I think people can oppressed people are the better architects of their own resistance. But those tactics that you're talking about are actually in place and they're ongoing, and none of the things you're talking about actually happened. There have been weekly protests in Bil'in, for example, that have been going on for the past 12 years or so, and we're not getting the result that you think we're having. The problem is that power doesn't. When Israel gets to act with impunity, that's what they do, and there's nothing. There's no real power standing in the face of Israel to stop and cease. And Palestinians have only their bodies. And Palestinians have every right to sling stones, to do whatever. I mean, frankly, it is passive resistance. Those rocks are totally symbolic. And anybody, any sentient being, anybody with a heart should be able to see that. These are people who have no control over their lives, who have been watching their neighbors and loved ones and parents and siblings just die by the hundreds every single day as if they're vermin, as if their lives don't matter.
Thanks to Susan Abulhawa, Palestinian-American writer and author of the novel Mornings in Jenin, also founder of Playgrounds for Palestine. We talked with her about the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, protests along the Gaza-Israel border. Earlier in the week, we talked to a former representative of the Israeli Foreign Service. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll round up some of the top stories of the week in Wisconsin news, including the results of this week's special election primaries. And we'll meet some of the earliest women pioneers in the automotive world, driving, selling, and racing cars in an era when some men thought women shouldn't drive at all. It's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.